Number 15A.
I will go on with that exercise as we started out by just taking the first little tone of mind, which we epitomized just with that term creator, that mind is the creator, that not that the human parent mind is the creator. And out of that little epitome of just one term, we began to see that if we understand really the categories of being, that we can enlarge on that little epitome, because we can see that just one term doesn't really mean very much, that then everybody can think about that term the way he likes or she likes, whereas in science we are only allowed to use a term the way really the categories of being allow it to be used. So you see what we have done. We have taken creator and have seen, well, from our study of the synonyms, we know that mind is creator. So we brought the term creator back to its origin, back to God, first to its capitalized term as a category or subcategory in being. Once we have done that, we have seen that we can still much more enlarge our concept of creator, because if we see that creator is a specific idea characterizing mind, we can also see that mind is only mind when it reflects the other synonymous terms, when it reflects spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, so that the concept of creator can be enlarged through the tonality of the seven synonymous terms. Not only through the seven synonymous terms, but also still more enlarged to the ideas that characterize the seven synonymous terms. And so we have gone really through that whole word order first, and have contemplated what is the Son of God, that is the creation of that God, of the creation of mind, what is that Son of God, and by defining it through the ideas of mind and through the ideas of spirit and soul, principle, life, truth, and love, we have identified creator through the word order. You remember that we did that, huh? Then we have said even this can be enlarged, because we know that the word order does not stand alone, that the word order is synonymous with all the other synonymous terms. Therefore, we can see really that word order also from with a touch of the Christ, and taking in really another category of the one being, so that we begin to see we can go through the word order again with a little touch of the Christ, which means that we contemplate really that creator not only from the word as the word, as defining what the word, what God is as a creator, but also show that that creator has an expression, a self-manifestation, that that creator really expresses itself to man. The Christ is the divine message from God to man. And so we took in a touch of the Christ and went through the whole word order again, but every time taking in a little touch of the Christ. That's where we ended the last hour. And now you can say, but also that the word order reflects also the Christianity sense. I don't go so far as to say the Christianity order first, just the Christianity sense, which then gives to the creation, to the Son of God, a wider concept. So that we begin to see the nature of the Son of God from the standpoint of the seventh synonymous term in an additional view. It gives an additional slant on it. Let's do that. Let's try to exercise this so that when we are thinking about ourselves as the Son of God, that is from the divine mind, that is from the whole world order, and see that that has, through the Christ, come to us. What then is the form, the stature of the Son of God, if we bring in the Christianity sense? The Christianity sense, you know, is always when man is at the focal point, when the most important accent is put on man and is seen as the idea of God. So what is that Son of Man? When we look at it again from the word order, then we can see, for instance, that mind is that which makes man know himself as idea. So that man knows himself as idea. He's the very knowledge of the idea. That man, therefore, then knows that he is the intelligence of mind. He is that. As spirit, perhaps you can see that then spirit, that man is known by spirit, so that man really sees himself and is aware of himself as a reflection of spirit. And so we build up that Son of God as what he is, as the idea of intelligence in mind, perhaps in spirit that he is the idea of substance in spirit, but perhaps the idea of infinite reflection in spirit, of infinite order in spirit. We go perhaps to soul, and what is, when we regard man from the point of view of soul, bring man back to soul, we can see that man is sinless in soul, that his nature is absolutely defined and identified and unchangeable and cannot be changed, cannot be touched by anything, that is untouchable by a sin, so that man is a sinless idea, and we begin to see that the creation of man is a sinless, unchangeable, identified idea. Or if we go to principle, and what would we see perhaps from principle, we will see that man as the idea of principle, therefore is an idea of system. He's a systematic idea. He's an idea of a calculus. He's the calculus himself, and begins to see that he is a self-operating idea, that he reflects as the idea of principle, really the government of principle, that man governs himself by being governed by God. So we get the self-government of true theocracy of man, so that he's under the theocratic government of principle. Or you see man from the point of view of life, and so we can see, well, man is always lifted up. He's never in the earth, never earthbound, but he always is a state of inspiration, a state of intuition, a state of spontaneity, a state of infinite multiplication. He is a state of infinite substance as the multiplication of substance. And so we begin to see something about that lofty attitude of man that is not bound to earth, but that, like in the fifth day of creation, flies above the earth into the open firmament of heaven, is always above everything. Or as the idea of truth, we can see what is the Son of Man from the point of view of truth. We see man is consciousness. He's God's consciousness of himself. So man is self-conscious. He's conscious of himself, he's conscious of God, he's conscious of the universe, he's conscious of every other idea. He's never in a state of unconsciousness, never in a state of archetypal consciousness or collective consciousness. He's always of the nature of divine consciousness, of that supra consciousness, which is the divine consciousness. He always knows what he knows. He knows that he's whole. He knows all about his health, that he's whole, that he's entire, that he's factual, that nothing is missing, that he is an ideal man, that nothing is, that he's not short of anything, but that he is always the whole. Or you look at man from the point of view of love, and one sees, well, what is man? What is the Son of God from the point of view of love? And you see that man is always mothered. There's always a mother, and this mother, by the divine love, is always embraced by the divine love, always protected, always welcomed by the divine love. He's never excluded, he's never excommunicated, he's never ousted out of this universe, but he's always taken in into the embrace of love. He's always at the point of absolute perfection and fulfillment, so that he can always fulfill that place in the whole universe which is destined for him to do, so that he finds really his place within the whole. And so you can go through that whole world order from the point of view as you see man. I don't know if I have made it clear, those different standpoints, though I have always taken the word order. But the word order first, the word as the word, which just defines first the creator, what is the nature of the creator. Then I have taken the word order a little bit with a slant of the Christ in it, just a touch of the Christ in it, by saying, well, that creator is only a creator when he expresses himself. And so we went through the word order with the tonality of the Christ in itself as the expression of the word. Now we have taken Christianity and have considered man as the outcome of that word order, so that we have focused on man as the nature of man, and see that that nature of man is always the nature reflecting God. It's always a reflection of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, the reflection of the word order. And in the same way, naturally, we can go and see that same word order again with some aspect of science in it, so that we also see the fourth side of the city, how that really affects the world order, still under the question creator. We still are talking about creator and about nothing else. So that from the point of view of science, then we can see that there is only one being. Science is always that which the beingness of being, and so we can take again the word order and go through the seventh synonymous term and see from the point of view of mind that we see that the creator and its creation is one. It's one being. That there is not the creator on one side and the creation on the other side, but that creator and creation is one. That's the point of view of mind, that mind and mind's idea is one. Or from the point of view of spirit, you see that oneness of being, that we see that spirit and the Son of God as really the reflection of that one God is one, that it is one reality, that there are not two realities, a reality of spirit and a reality of man, but that there is only one reality, the reality of spirit. Or from the point of view of soul, I can see that there is only one identity, that there is not an identity called God and an identity called man, so that the ego God and the ego man is one, that there is just one ego, just one selfhood in being that includes creator and creation. Or from the point of view of principle, we can see that principle and idea is one, so that we have not two things, a principle and somewhere the expression of that principle as an idea, but that the principle always includes the idea, and therefore we can see that the creator and creation is one in principle, therefore is one in its infinite operation and self-organization, so that not God is doing something and man is not doing the same thing. When God works, man works, so that there is the oneness of the operation and the demonstration and government of principle, which is at the same time the government of man. Or from the point of view of life, really, we can see that the creator and creation have one and the same life. That life is life, that there is not life God and life man, that there is just one life, namely that the life of man is the same life as the life of God, and I have just that one life in front of me. So that the Son of God is not somewhere outside that one life and has to try to get into that one life in order to be eternal life, but that there is always life, and that life is unlimited, and therefore not limited to God or limited to man. It's just a wonderful blending of God and man as one life. That shows me that the Son of God is as eternal as life, as eternal as God, so that the Son of Man has not a beginning and has not an ending, that he is coming from eternity and is going to eternity. He's not going through a time sense, because there is only one life. So that the time sense, that the mortal experience, is a false concept. Jesus was quite happy to go away with 30 years, and others were quite happy to go away with when they were still young, because they have fulfilled their mission here, that they have done what had to be done. So that we must see one only comes from light and goes to light, actually, that there is only one life without beginning and end. Or else we always have a feeling we started out somewhere and should see that we prolong that existence as long as we can and have a hell of a time to prolong it. And this is all a false concept. Life and life of man is one. So is truth. From the aspect of science, we can see really that creation, that the Son of Man, is really nothing but the divine infinite calculus of truth. That truth and the calculus of truth as man is one and the same. So that you know how Jesus said at one time, in one of those rare statements that are not in the Bible, which has been found, that he said, "You are the city. You are the calculus." So the calculus was not just the calculus of truth, God himself, but that he said, "You are the calculus." And so we have the oneness of the calculus. The calculus is a scientific aspect of that truth. Or from the point of view of love, we can see that love and love's idea is one, that the Son of God is actually mothered by that one love, so that he reflects that one love, and therefore is constantly at the point of perfection. Is constantly at the point where at every stage, that's very important, that at every stage of his development, he's perfect. You remember how we have in one of our little pamphlets have shown, I not even know in which one it is. I never know what I've written. But you certainly remember that we have shown that every stage in our development or in the spiritual development, we must consider every stage as a stage of perfection, of fulfillment. And not always think, no, mind is the beginning, and then comes spirit, and then comes soul, and finally, there is life, and then we have fulfillment. We must see that the Son of Man is not a state of things, that he's a process, that he's an evolution process, so that at every stage of his evolution, he has a perfect status. And that's science. So that if evolution goes through many changes, through many mutations, through many paradigm shifts, he's always at the point of perfection if we can see love from the point of view of science. So one has a feeling that at whatever stage one is, there is always a fulfilled and a perfect stage. And so one is not always frustrated and feels one hasn't yet arrived at the point, one is on the way and that it's a long way, and will I reach my aim, and will I reach my destiny, my mission, and so on. That's a time sense that comes into it, whereas in science you are always at the state of beingness. That's the tone that comes in of beingness, that love and love's idea is one. Therefore, perfection and perfect idea at every stage of its mission is perfect and is one with love. Yes. Can you see, if I would start again what I started an hour ago, I would go through it again differently, but I would stick to the categories. That's the point, huh? That's the point. Then in that way, we are really seeing an idea in its science, in its scientific context. Yes. And so we can see now what is the advantage of reasoning in categories. If we take the biblical text of John, we would not be able to do that. We would just have a statement that says, you are not born of your parents, you are born of God. Finished. You are created by God. And so we would have to accept that as a statement, and we wouldn't be able to really elaborate on it in a scientific way. It would be a statement. So we must bring in an explanation. What kind of explanation? Always an explanation that is true or according to the categories of being, so that we never fall out of the categories of being. So what were we able to do? We are really able to put more finer meshes into that net so that we can catch more fishes, so that the result is more abundant than before. The smaller the meshes are, the more we catch, the more dainty, so to say, the complexity of the net is, the more we can see the infinitude of being. So in this way we can see what we are doing. That first we were taking the infinite and reducing it through the categories to some kind of to some epitomes on different levels, and at that level we were taking that level and say, well, from now on I can translate it into the textbook, into the categories of the textbook, so that we build the bridge from the Bible to the textbook and say, creator is already still a biblical term. I can take it through my knowledge of the textbook and say, creator belongs to a certain definite category, to the subcategory of mind. Then when we have done that, we can expand it even more. Then we can say, but mind is only mind when it reflects all seven synonymous terms. Then therefore that we can take that little term, creator, and put it right through all the seven synonymous terms. Then we can go even further and say, well, every category reflects every other category. So we can take that same word order and put into that word order a touch of the Christ activity, then a touch of the Christianity activity, then a touch of the science activity. And so we go four times through the word order in this way, and every time the picture becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, and therefore more elaborate, more beautiful, more complex, and we get a higher sense of this one little term, creator. That's the method we were using. And so at one point I said that what John Dolly introduced was that method of epitomizing the text. That it was not just a funny inspiration he had, or just a funny leaning he had. This was one of the great, belongs to the great revelations that John Dolly had, that he could see that if we can epitomize a big subject into categories, that then or reduce it to epitomes, that does not make the big small, quite on the contrary, because then afterwards we can take these epitomes and bring them back to the categories of being, to the seven, to the four, the four, and therefore in this way enlarge it again and bring it right back into infinitude. Capito? Yeah? Isn't that a terrific method? And you see, it's a method that makes us independent of a text. It starts with a text, let's say with a biblical text. It goes on with a biblical text and tries to find a smaller, a shorter text that epitomizes the main point in it. And from that epitome, really, we can reduce it further, just to the seven and the four and the four, just to 15 categories or subcategories, three main categories, 15 subcategories. And from there, then we have found, so to say, a rock bottom from which to stand. And then from there, we can build up again, build up through the categories, through the capitalized term, ad infinitum, infinitely. And each one, when he knows those categories and the tonality of the capitalized term, each one then is, so to say, his own teacher. He is then no more dependent on text and have to read the text like mad until he gets hot about it, but that he can sit back in peace and say, I have my system, I have my science, and I can just compute alone according to the science. That's what the epitomes want to achieve. That's why the study, or why the devotion to the epitome study, is one of the most important things that I see we can do at this period, to know how to handle really epitomes. This is a method that is hardly known in any other science, and it's one of the most creative methods, because through reducing the infinite to simplicity, you can then become creative by again enlarging it through the capitalized terms, which are always the capitalized term of the infinite, of nothing less than the infinite.